You are listening to The Night Walk, an audio companion. For more than 65 years, the Night War has taught us what it takes to fight a war, and what war takes from those who fight. Welcome to Episode 2, August 1943. Brought to you with the support of the Able to Help Foundation, assisting the families of active duty military personnel. We can help, so we do. Yet decades before Able Company veterans founded this remarkable charity, they were fighting in the hilltop town of Troina, Sicily, pitted against Nazi Germany's 15th Panzergrenadier Division. The battle would ultimately last 6 days, and end with Troina completely destroyed, but the Allies victorious. Less than a week after the Battle of Troina, and with the Allied forces, led by the famously charismatic generals Patton and Montgomery, hot on their heels, the Germans would evacuate Sicily for mainland Italy. There they began preparations for an inevitable Allied attack, and for a gritty defense of Italy that would prove to be one of the bloodiest battlegrounds of the European theater, and dash Able Company's hopes for victory by Christmas. In breaks from fighting, homesick soldiers often spent their time reading and rereading victory mail, or V-mail, letters from home, and writing their own. Unsurprisingly, considering his fame as a diarist, Bucky Barnes was a prolific letter writer and would ultimately post more than 24 letters home during the Sicily campaign. His correspondence, of course, included his friend Steve, who was by then, unbeknownst to Bucky, touring the United States as the costumed Captain America, his mother, Winifred Barnes, his brothers, Ted and Jack, and his beloved 12-year-old sister, Rebecca Barnes, nicknamed Curly for her wildly uncontrollable hair. Thoughts of home were a comforting distraction from the shocking violence and hardship of battle, but not the only distraction, as we will see when we return to Sicily in August of 1943.
The same old sweetheart, the same old place, a boy in khaki, a girl lay. He bends to kiss her, she lifts her face. The boy in khaki, the girl in lace. Tenderly he sighs.
August 2nd. It is August now, but what does that fucking matter from this hellhole? Pinned down for days trying to take this goddamn town. We have ammunition, but little for the 30 cals, only because the line is harassed so badly that getting guys back and forth for supply is too risky. There is a break in the shelling. These goddamn Krauts are dug in. It got me to thinking about Tom Baxter and Seamus Moore. I remember going once after a long shift, all of us dead tired and me and Walsh complaining like you wouldn't believe. All this new stock had come in at the same time and we were working around the clock. Never been so tired in my life. This had to be in 38. And Moore said, "You dumbass shits don't even know what tired is." And Tom just shook his head and said, "Moore, knock that off. We ain't even drunk yet." And I said, no, let him talk. After all, it was me who did at least a quarter more work than Seamus Moore did on any given day, wasn't it? So he and I got a right to be worn out. And I thought he was going to hit me, but I guess it was a good thing I was smiling, since most people figure I'm just having a laugh most of the time anyway. And Moore's face got real still. "You never fought for days on end, did you, boy? You never sat in a trench, not sure if you were dead or alive? So tired because the shelling won't stop? You watch your pals get blown to pieces right next to you? And you'd think this is tired. He was real shell-shocked, I suppose. I forgot to say, Frank Lorenzo, I think his first name is Francesco. Anyhow, he speaks Italian. From 1st Platoon, got killed this morning. He used to be in my platoon before the landing, and he got turned around somehow so as he's ended up on my rifle team. He got hit, and we called for a medic, but all a medic could do was give him morphine. He's not my man anymore, technically, and I'm not the brass, but I started to write a letter anyway. And then I realized my hands were still bloody. I can't write a letter like that. I am the one who had to tell Chernowitz and Miller Squad about Frank. I felt awful about it. Chernowitz and Frank both knew each other from home and were in each other's pockets like you wouldn't believe. Back when Frank was in our platoon, Joe Fortunato used to say, "If you sock one to Lorenzo, Chet's the one goes flying." Miller used to joke that the war's great tragedy was Chernowitz and Frank ended up in different platoons. You know, I wonder if it might be true. If Frank had been with Chernowitz, I can guarantee you he wouldn't have gotten lost and ended up in my squad. The way Chet tells it, he's the only reason Frank didn't get lost and end up at the naval recruiter instead of the army. Chet just started bawling something awful when I told him. Made me sick at heart to see. It's like as if Steve were here and got killed. Thank God he is home. I don't know what I would do. Fortunately, Miller was able to scrounge up some whiskey. It's about the only thing that makes my hand stop shaking. Harry is awful broken up about Frank, as he was in his squad before it all. He says to me, quieter than Harry's ever talked in his life, he says, "Buck, this is not going to be the last time, is it?" And I know what he means, because the same thing came into my head the minute the goddamn shell exploded, and I saw what it did to Frank. This is what we're going to be seeing from now until the war's over, or else it's our turn, or our buddy's turn. Frankie had a brother that got wounded, but I don't know where. I suppose in North Africa, since I believe he was Army too. And a little brother, too, is home in Staten Island, which is where Frank's from, and I gave him a hard time about that. His folks own a bakery, and I guess Frankie was always going to take it over, even before his brother got killed. Frankie got mess duty once back home and got real popular after that. Our CO back then, Lieutenant Booker, who got moved up to the company, God save us from Halliwell, a 90-day wonder, called him Cannoli, which, trust me, was a big fucking mystery to all those poor schmucks born south of Jersey. I saw both of Frankie's legs get blown off. He didn't even make a sound at first, and then he called for his ma. He was crying, and he just kept calling for his ma. Me too, pal. I think that's all any of us are doing, even if we can't say it out loud until we know it's the end. Me, I don't want to bring my mother into this. I want her and everything good to stay in Brooklyn forever. Poor Frankie and his poor mother. I don't think I can ever forget the sound he was making, crying for his mother. August 7th. Gene Plinsky hurt 2 days ago, but not too badly. And now we have Trowina for ourselves, but it seems just because Jerry gave up. By Adler's account, Gene was ahead of him when we were trying to advance against the line on the 5th, providing covering fire, when Gene yelped like a dog getting stepped on by accident and went down. Ricochet crowd bullets straight into his ass. Damn kid got shot in the ass. Plinsky is one of those fellows you cannot get down, however, and all he really had to say was, "Thank God I'm not taller, as it might have been my legs." And that's for sure as hell true. Of course, if it had been his legs, he might have punched his ticket home. Anyhow, Abel has gotten off all right, despite these being the worst days anybody's life. Rivera and Esposito both wounded from Miller's squad. Tim's, Denitz, and Shea from Carter's. And just Plinsky from mine. And of course, poor Frank. We heard B Company had 2 KIA as well. A Hubert and Granger. Don't know either of them, but we set a mask for them and Frank with Father Kavinsky in a real, actual church, even though it was bombed to shit. Line for confession was about 18 guys deep, so I skipped it. Frankly, I don't want to reflect on it all, and I certainly don't want to pray the rosary. I just want to rest, and see if Harry's found any more whiskey, because that seems like the only way I'll get any rest at all. August 9th. Here's where Miller being a married man really does a fellow favors. Yesterday spent getting our gear all in order for moving out now that we are not going to be staying here, and instead linking up with the 45th. At least that's the word that Harry heard. This morning, after a briefing got canceled, of course not until we'd already assembled and stood around for 2 hours, fucking Halliwell. He knows how to stand around all right, or else shit himself if he hears an 88. Well, me and Harry decide to take a look around, and we're walking this courtyard plaza place that was bombed to shit, and I hear a dog. No shit, I hear a dog. So we start looking around, and sure enough, there's this poor thing all banged up with cuts and covered in dust and halfway buried, with what looks like its tail broken, and maybe its paw. "You know," says Harry next to me as we're trying not to scare the poor thing, "I never met a fascist dog before." Typical Harry to get me laughing. "Well, surely you met a commie dog, Miller," I say as I get the little fellow free and hold him up under my arm. Only dogs I knew were the ones that hung around the docks, but they're not man's best friend for nothing, and start looking for a collar or something. "Dog's gotta be capitalist, Buck," says Harry, like it's the most obvious thing in the world, and like I wasn't getting one over on him on account of he voted for Browder in 36 on a lark. "You ever seen what they're willing to do for table scraps?" Anyway, we both figure that in a town this size there's gotta be a doctor or two, or maybe even a vet. So we keep on going after giving the fellow a bit of water. Two GIs wandering Sicily for a dog, when we ought to be getting our platoon in order. But the poor dog didn't ask for any of this, did he? "Guess we ought to hope there ain't any leftover krauts hiding around," says Harry after about 10 minutes. "Thanks, pal, so helpful," is my response. And so I yell for help as loud as I can to spite him. "Got a dog here, Canis lupus, that needs help. Help! Helpo!" Miller cracks up. "Cane! Cane!" He's shouting, and apparently that is Italian for dog. I gotta do him one better, but my Italian shot with helpo. I go, "Domine, ad adjuvandum me festina." And of course, Harry really loses it then on account of how he didn't grow up papist. And so I figured that if there's one thing me and the Italians got in common, it's a hell of a lot of time at Mass. So I start, "In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti," etc., etc. And this is how you know God's got a sense of humor. Because the shutters of this cottage above us open, and two dames lit up like angels from the sun behind them poke their heads out and start talking in Italian. And Miller can't hardly believe his eyes, and neither can I. Long story short, Harry's got no eyes for anybody except his wife, but I got two eyes, don't I? Benedetta and Sophia. It's one thing to see a beautiful dame in regular life, but to see two of them when you're in the middle of a goddamn war is something else altogether, almost like you can't believe your eyes. But Benedetta's got a little English, and they both laugh and giggle at me like a regular American dame would for yelling Latin in the street. But they see why I was doing it once I show them the dog, and invite us in. And Harry gets nervous as hell, but I guess these dames lived on a farm or something, because they knew what to do with the dog, and they got the little thing bandaged up in no time. And then Benedetta asks if I want a tour, and I say, "Yes, ma'am, sure do." And Harry positively scrams. Anyhow, ended up late for briefing with Halliwell, which should be worth it in ordinary circumstances, but in this case, was exceptionally worth it. August 10th. It's funny. I think the only thing you gotta do to fix a forgetful man is put him in combat. He will close his eyes and find he cannot forget a single thing he ever saw, smelled, felt, or heard. August 11th. To spend the rest of this war in between Benedetta's thighs? Heaven. This morning, had several free hours and made my way to her little house. Brought a little army chocolate to share with her, and she looked at it like it was a new pair of silk stockings. Did me in her mouth for what felt like a goddamn hour, not letting me come, and when I did, holy hell, these Italian dames are something else. No doubt it wasn't the trip around the world Uncle Sam planned on me taking, but by God, I'll take it. August 13th. Jerry gave up on Sicily. Took a month. Home by Christmas, after all. August 14th. Left our happy village yesterday. Very sad for all. Most sad for myself and Benedetta, of course. Bella Benedetta. The dog is fine. She has named him Bucky, and he is well on the mend and is certainly expected to survive the war, hoping he will share a bit of that luck with me, or perhaps trade places, and I can be the Bucky that stays with Benedetta. Told this to Harry and Castellano, who socked me one that I definitely deserved. August 19th. Word is the Thunderbirds and Patton beat the Tommies to Messina. Miller heard they got there yesterday. We have been completely on the sidelines for the past 2 days, getting stinking drunk of the worst god-awful wine I ever tasted. But at the same time, our not being in combat anymore does make it taste wonderful. We tossed out an entire bottle for Dick McCafferty, Frank Lorenzo, John Howe, who did die in the hospital, we heard a few days ago. Poor bastard. I guess the medic who told me he was going to make it was playing chaplain with me or something. And Malcolm Cook, who did not die, but the poor son of a bitch lost a leg and an arm. Several of our boys are complaining that we ought to have been the ones to win the race, but sure enough, I counted two clerks, a truck driver and a goddamn adjutant saying it, and I think me, Miller, and Glenn would have gotten courts-martialed if we hadn't been too drunk to do more than tell them to go fuck themselves. They aren't the schmucks on the line, are they? At any rate, with the crowd skedaddled, this island really is not half bad, apart from the dust and the sun. I have never been so hot in my life these past few days, and I have lived on the fourth floor in Brooklyn in August, for God's sake. Me and the fellows are so dark as to be mistaken for Italians, and the Guidos among us might as well be stowaways from Africa. August 20th. Finally, some mail. How wonderful it is to get mail. I cannot even put it into words how wonderful. Suddenly we go from a sour bunch of miserable men to where you might think Jerry had surrendered. That's how joyful everyone suddenly is. Thank God for mail. It has been more than a month on account of us moving so much after the landing. But now that the war has really begun, it feels like we are further from home than ever. I got 9 letters from Ma, 2 from Dad, and 7 from Curly, and 3 each from Jack and Ted, and none at all from Steve, which I cannot account for other than his awful handwriting getting his letters sent to the wrong place. Dear wonderful Curly put some of Ma's perfume on her letters, and I have no idea how she thought of that, except perhaps reading about it in one of her magazines. I almost started crying like a little baby when I opened their letter and smelled that smell I hadn't even realized I was missing. News from home. Apparently little Patty Flannery died in the Pacific. Before I left, I knew he was engaged to Betty Leahy, so I feel awful for her, all right. No matter how she always gave Patty the brush off, we all knew he'd win her over eventually. Poor Betty and Mrs. Flannery, just about the nicest lady in all of our neighborhood. I can only imagine Ma's rolling up her sleeves to help out. Curly doing well in school. She transcribed her report card from the end of the school year, and I will see her finish high school and go to college if it's the last thing I do. Jack's letters are all about 2 lines of what all the fellas his age are doing. Who is in training, who is shipped out, who is assigned to what. Good God, as if I don't get enough of that already. Rest of Jack's letters were, I read about Sicily, were you a part of this battle or that battle or this battle or that battle? I don't doubt for a second that he will sign up as soon as he is 18, although it makes me sick to think about it. Fairly to Jack, though, he did get me up to speed on the Dodgers, and a whole lot of trading to the Giants. Medwick, Allen, and Camilli gone? Medwick! Outrage isn't strong enough. At least Herman is staying put for now. Or at least if he's been traded, Jack knows better than to tell me. I know they are writing me constantly, as I spend half my time writing them as well. How I wish mail would come more often. Or to have a telephone call. To hear Ma ask me how I'm eating. Poorly, but drinking too well. Or just to hear a voice at all. Don't think I could bear to talk to Dad. He could hardly speak when I said goodbye, he was so terribly upset. So much worse than Ma, it aches to think of it. Of course, now that I am here, I think I understand a little why. It will be a quiet night, as everyone is reading their mail again and again and again. August 21st. Wonderful, darling Girlie. So in my letters home, I have spoken often enough of Harry, I suppose, that my Miss Gumshoe, Becca Barnes, was able to piece together enough about him to send a letter to his own kid sister. Apparently I mentioned his hometown, and certainly his last name, and knowing exactly how many Millers I'm sure there are in what Harry calls a city of Lowell, Massachusetts, poor confused bastard doesn't know any better, apparently she pieced it together because I said his family runs a grocery next to some mill on the river, and so a letter arrived addressed to Miller's Grocery, Ms. Miller, younger sister of Harry, to his family's grocery, after Curly decided she was going to be best friends with Bobby, Barbara, Harry's kid sister, and Curly doesn't even know her name but somehow sent a letter to her. I need to retire Curly. She is a regular Philip Marlowe. Harry showed me the letter from Bobby, which was mostly about me. Her asking, is your friend Bucky really a professional baseball player? One day. And is he taller than you? Yes. Tell your friend Bucky to take care of you, and in return, I will take care of his sister Rebecca. Feels like we have been laughing for hours about it. So strange and wonderful our 2 good sisters could make us so happy from so very far away. Other good news. Harry's wife, Margaret's still perfectly healthy. Doctor now thinks it might be twins. Harry delighted, but sick at the thought he might still be here when she gives birth. Home by Christmas is all we can hope for. August 22nd. 107th transferred to 36th Infantry under 6th Corps. All rumors say we are invading the mainland. Certainly they are preparing for one. Miller working his friends at battalion for more information. Of course, we knew we were not going to be spending the rest of the war in Sicily. I didn't finish school, but I do know Hitler is in Germany. But somehow it feels so terribly fast that we are going back into it all again, like we have not caught our breath at all yet. August 27th. Had to give the fellows the clap talk today. Again. The goddamn army issues prophylactics, but these idiots see these Italian dames and lose all sense. Not that they had much to start with. We are infantry. Chaplain came to me and Harry, very apologetic, said to us that Battalion HQ directed all the company chaplains to give a talk to the men about wrapping it up. This is a classic officer idea if I ever heard one. Get the priest to talk to us about using rubbers. So anyway, Father Kavinsky had the brains to know how that'll go over, so he sees us two and asks us to go get the other non-coms together, but first, did we know where Tally was? So the trouble is that Tally's girl back home sent him a goddamn Dear John letter he got 3 days ago, and all anybody's seen of him is puking his guts out, or with the puttana. And considering we're in between actions, and Tally is Tally, best damn first sergeant in Uncle Sam's army, we are all pulling out the stops to cover for him. But Father Kavinsky sure as hell don't need to know all that. And Miller decides to have a laugh and says, "Is that Corporal Tally, sir?" to the chaplain like he's never heard of him. Father Kavinsky looks like a startled bird most of the time anyhow, with that beak and his eyebrows, which I think are enough that a bird might actually confuse him for a nest, but this was a whole nother level of surprise. "First Sergeant Tally, Staff Sergeant Miller," he says, completely bewildered. "I'm looking for First Sergeant Tally." "Father, did you mean Sergeant Fitchner?" Harry asks. "I can get you Sergeant Fitchner." "Or Sergeant Glenn," I say, thinking that Cal'll be disappointed he missed this. "Maybe you meant Sergeant Carter?" Harry's turn. Well, Father Kavinsky's no idiot, and he's an officer, of course, but being a chaplain is wholly different than a CO, so we can get away with this kind of thing. "I take it I won't be able to locate Sergeant Tally," he says, very tired. As I am frankly quite sure now that without us saying it, he knows perfectly well that Tally is the last man in our company to hear a lesson about prophylactics at the moment. And so Miller claps my shoulder and says, "You know Sergeant Barnes here is excellent at speeches." The goddamn traitor. So anyway, we organized all the non-coms together and told the fellas to be smart about the FIGA and to use GI rubbers for God's sake. I'm about ready to hand in my stripes, frankly. August 31st. More boat exercises. All of us miserable about them. We chose Army for a reason. At least I can swim. There are at least 20 men in all able that cannot. In the past 2 days, Harry, Tom Kelly, Ernie Powell, and I have been holding lessons, because I can't stop a Kraut bullet, but I can at least make sure they don't fucking drown. And then Halliwell, Kurlansky, and Weber came up to us, and Kurlansky is smiling because Halliwell looks like he's about to court-martial us. "Staff Sergeant Miller, can you please explain what is going on here? This is completely outside regulations." And Weber, thank God at least a senior officer has a brain, says, "George, you're teaching the men to swim, seeing as we're doing another beach landing." Well, confirmation it really is going to be another beach landing, although if you ask the goddamn pigeons of Brooklyn, I'm sure they'd be able to say the same thing, considering we're meant to be fighting Jerry, and the mainland's where Jerry scuttled off to. "Of course," says Halliwell. He is a true redhead, and the only one of us still pale as hell because he keeps getting burned red, and then his face peels, and it's like nothing happened. Poor fella, because it means he blushes like a dame. "Capital idea. Excellent." "That's what I thought too, sir," says Harry, face completely straight. "I got a capital idea here, Sergeant Barnes, that's what I said. We're gonna make these boy swimmers. Capital swimmers. Positively top-notch, I say, sir, indeed." Goddamn, Harry. I tried not to smile, but Weber saved us all by laughing enough for the two of us. After they wandered off, very quiet, Powell says to me, "Sarge, Lord is my witness, if brains is lard, he can't grease a skillet." Where does he come up with these? Anyway, now the boys are good enough not to drown. So long as the orders stop coming to increase our gear again and again. At this rate, we will be carrying at least 60 pounds each. More, if you're a machine gunner.
Though Bucky never came home from the war, his words did. His letters and diaries would go on to inspire not only Rebecca, who became the first person in the Barnes family to attend college, but also subsequent generations of his family. In the Night War, Bucky established a legacy of service that would lead to Barnes' men and women becoming doctors, teachers, firefighters, and soldiers. Next week, some of those family members will join us in studio, and Bucky and Able Company will storm the beaches of Salerno and begin the grueling fight through Italy.